Hey, this is Sean Holmes from Boldly Going Nowhere. Just want to let you know that Labor Day is September 1st. And why not celebrate it with Castwave Studios' Amazon page? Save up to 60% on books, music, party supplies, and more by going to castwavestudios.com/Amazon. That's castwavestudios.com/Amazon. Bookmark it, tell a friend, tell a neighbor, tell the guy across the street. Who cares? Just tell somebody. Anyway, let's start the show. Boldly Going Nowhere, Season 2, Episode 12, Hat Trick.
The Internet, the final frontier.
Well, hello. On today's episode, we geek out about Guardians of the Galaxy, plus reboots and remakes, franchises that make our inner nerds yell in protest or weep with joy. I'm Sean Holmes, and you just got to the good part. Strap in and sit tight. You're boldly going nowhere. Boldly Going Nowhere. God knows it's been a while. So, let's start off. How's everyone doing today?
Still sick. I apparently have more going on than most people, though. But so, hey, hooray illness.
Hooray illness.
Yay.
Hooray.
Anyway, so we're now, I think we've been on hiatus for 4 weeks? Maybe more?
A month.
Probably something like that. So, lots been going on in that, so let's talk about one of the bigger events that recently just happened. We have Otacon coming into town, and two of the people we have with us tonight have actually went and enjoyed it in all its glory and splendor. So I think, Sean, you've been there 6 times now?
Yes. Hi, I'm Sean.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Not to be confused with Sean.
Not Sean Holmes. Sean. This is Sean Murphy from...
Hello, Murphy.
Hello, other Sean.
We meet again.
At least you're not yelling, "There can be only one."
Well, he is holding the sword.
Sean Murphy, I met. He's no longer here.
Oh, dear. Anyway, so how... All right, so you've been to Otacon 6 times now?
Yeah, I went when I first moved here. I've been there so many times, I've probably seen close to 50 panels. Yeah, I love going to panels, I don't know about you.
Oh, no.
Okay.
No, that's fair enough. So, like, now you went there to promote your art, right?
No, the Otacon is the one convention I go to where I just go to have fun. That was even before I started getting into the whole exhibitor thing.
Oh, yeah?
So basically, like, every time I go there, I've just been, like, trying to watch stuff, go to panels. I don't often meet too many celebrities because most of the times I don't really know much of them, so I'm not usually waiting in the autograph lines like most people. But the one time I waited in line was because the artist from Bubblegum Crisis was there, so I had to go and get him signed and do an art sketch on my Otacon book. If anybody knows what that is. If not, you can email me. No, I'm just kidding.
I remember Bubblegum Crisis as being the anime that really, really loves Blade Runner.
Yeah.
Yes. In fact, because that's the one with the, Pris, and the band's name is The Replicants.
Pris and The Replicants, that's the first thing you see in the first episode.
Yes.
Is a bass drum that says Pris and The Replicants, like, real subtle, guys.
So I wouldn't watch Blade Runner until, like, high school, so I didn't get that reference for quite a long time.
And there's some Terminator thrown in there as well, but...
And some RoboCop also. The cops parallel RoboCop all the time, being underfunded and, like, used... Because they basically are owned by corporations. But anyway, back to Otacon.
Is there an angry black lieutenant?
No, there's an angry black police chief that's always telling the Leon to not go close to investigating the corporation Genom. Because they're like, you don't have any proof, they'll sue us. You know, that kind of thing.
You're a loose cannon, the Leon, but you get results.
Oh, good times. Yeah. Hey, they're called cliches for a reason.
Yeah.
Fabulous. Jordan... You also went to Otacon.
Gosh, you know, the last Bully Going Nowhere I was privy to was our Every Con is Awesome episode, in which we talked about Awesome Con, and Too Many Games and flicked boogers at DashCon from afar. That anime, that Otakon rather, that was not a very awesome con, in my opinion.
Really?
It was a weekend fraught with a bunch of little pains. The first one was kind of an issue of its own runaway popularity, really, so I guess I can't blame them for that, but I think there were like 35,000 pre-registrants, and it's getting so big that I'm pretty sure they're going to be moving to a different venue in either next year or 2 years from now.
2017.
Okay.
Yeah, they're moving to DC.
All right, and so my friend Brennan and I, we normally show up on Friday, at the ass crack of dawn, and wait in line for like 4 hours to get our tickets. Right. So he said, this year, they're actually giving out the badges on Thursday evening, so we'll leave here at 7:30 p.m. on Thursday, and then go down and get our badges and be back before like 10 o'clock. And that was the plan. We came back at 2:30 in the morning, empty handed.
Sounds
the lines were that long. I think I missed getting our badge by like 7,000 people by the time they shut it down.
Jesus.
Okay, see, I went to my first Otakon in 2008 or 2009, I can't remember, but I would always go Thursday. My friend and I would go down to the city on a Thursday. We'd get there after work. We would wait maybe 20 minutes max in line, maybe half an hour if it started to get close to the steps. Mm-hmm. But you would be waiting inside in a line that maybe would only take 20 minutes, maybe half an hour if you happened to get there right as people were getting out of work. And that's how I've done it every year for years. Only this time, I was like, oh, we went out to eat, and then we, after the Thursday mini event, did the Matsuri Festival, that's new now, well, third year, but, so, relatively new, and we went to go eat over there, and then we go back to get our badge at, like, around 8:30, I think it was, and we're like, we thought we'd just walk in, get our badge, and leave. That did not happen. Instead, we came to a line where someone told us, if you wait in line, we're not sure if we will be able to process you, and I'm like, well, what? Because, like, with the doors over there, so I figured it was just, like, three weaving lines followed by three other weaving lines. But then I realized, no, the line went around the side of the building, weaved about eight times, then went around the other side of the building where you thought the real entrance was, and weaved another four times. And I was like, dear God. We ended up waiting about 2 hours and 15 minutes in line.
Jesus.
And then they closed the line off and said, if you're not inside by the time 10:30 happens, you will not get your badge today. What I think happened is, this is the first year that it's pre-reg now because they have a cap. So it used to be that there were not that many pre-regs because people would just show up Friday and get their badge and wait in line the 2 hours or an hour, hour and a half. Only this time, everybody was like, everyone's pre-reg. There's no regular registrations people anymore. So everybody came Thursday, expecting to get their badge quickly, I guess, like I used to always do. Mm-hmm. And so then I had to go Friday and wait in line. But luckily, I dropped my girlfriend off, I park, come back, and find out she found a friend right at the entrance, so I waited 5 minutes, and I said, yes.
Huzzah.
I was an asshole. Sorry, guys.
It's all right. No, I remember, because the last time I went to, I've only been to Otakon twice, and I really, honestly, after those two experiences, have no inclination to ever want to go again.
Mm.
The first year I went, I unfortunately did not have the common sense to pre-register. So I was in line. I got there at 8 a.m. I actually didn't get into the building until 2 p.m.
What?
Yeah. It was that... I was, like, literally at least half a mile away. It was that bad.
Wow. That's bad.
Jesus. Yeah.
Because I remember, like, my girlfriend did that 3 years ago, and she only had to wait an hour to an hour and a half.
No, I was...
When we got there, yeah.
Yeah, it was bad. It also didn't help that one of my friends was in a latex leather cat... Well, a latex cat suit. So he was,
burning up.
So, not only was he, like, literally roasting that thing, he also was having to be stopped every 5 minutes because some squealing little fangirl wanted a picture with him.
See, can I don't mean to make fun, but one of the things I always like to do when I go to my panels Friday morning is just look down at the lines and go, those are all the people that did pre-register.
Well, and so, yeah, the following year, I decided to pre-register, And I ran into a situation like the opposite of what you guys ran into this year. Was I showed up Thursday night, I walked in, I literally walked up to the front, got my badge, and left. It, like, I was there, and I was in and out in 5 minutes.
When was this?
This was, like, 2 years ago? Okay. Maybe three?
Mm. Yeah. Well, guess what? I had a friend who showed up Friday who just decided to buy a regular registration. They waited 10 minutes, because everyone was pre-reg, because they hadn't sold out this year. Mm-hmm. They got there around, like, I think noon on Friday. They didn't have to wait at all because everyone had already been pre-reg at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think there were still 4,000 registration badges left.
And you know what's weird? We ran into this situation. This is a weird phenomenon I'm noticing at cons recently.
Yeah.
We went to AwesomeCon. The bulk of us got our passes because we had press passes. They just waved us in. They were just like, go pick up your badges. You guys go upstairs. You pick them up there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, okay. So two of our friends had pre-registered, and so we came, I mean, I think it was Jordan.
Yeah.
Jordan bought his ticket at the con, but here's the crazy thing. You'd think he'd be waiting in line for like maybe an hour, hour and a half.
I think it was less than 20 minutes.
Yeah, he walked in. They were like, pre-reg over here, and the pre-reg line is going out the door, around the building, towards the back. It's wrapped around the building, right?
Mm-hmm.
The cash-only line... Jordan, like, literally walked in. 5 minutes later, he's back with his badge. I'm like, what the hell? How the hell did that happen?
Yeah, you know, I've been noticing...
It had to have been closer to 20 minutes because I was in line with... I was in line with a woman cosplaying as a Nightwing, and we had a conversation about the joys of Arkham City.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure that it had to have been about 20 minutes, but regardless... yeah, it's funny. I mean, well, then, obviously the advantage of pre-registrations, if you do it months in advance, then it's quite a bit cheaper.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So how many people were at AwesomeCon as compared to Otakon? Because Otakon was 30,000 pre-reg. I don't know how many registered during that day on Friday and Saturday.
I heard it was about 3,000 more.
Okay. Well, I mean, but then also for AwesomeCon, how many were at AwesomeCon?
Well, AwesomeCon was their second year, but they're pretty damn popular for new kid on the block.
Because it was at the Walter E. Washington Convention Center, and there was at least, 10K plus, if not more.
Well.
I mean, MAGFest is probably one of the conventions we enjoy more,
mm-hmm.
and they're in their 13th year.
Yep.
They're in their 13th year. I think they're just now starting to clear 12K.
That's why I like going.
I mean, which is good, because mm-hmm. it's still... In convention scope, it's still relatively small, but it's bigger than, say, Intervention. Intervention, I think they're clearing between 2 and 3K per year, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Somewhere around there.
Well, there wasn't a single panel on Friday that I was interested in seeing, but there was one around noon on Saturday that I was able to drag Brendan to. It was the Capcom panel. And that is... That was the worst panel I've ever seen in my life.
Well, what's so bad?
Well, let's kick it off. And first things first. I think there were supposed to be like three hosts, and only one of them showed up. So his plan was to basically show off a bunch of videos that he yanked off of YouTube, and just talk about how awesome old Capcom games are. His schedule was completely fucking knackered because, first of all, he threw up that famous scene from Mega Man X4
mm-hmm.
when Alia dies. I'm sorry, not Alia. Iris dies in Zero's arms. And so Zero, of course, responds by saying, like, what am I doing? I can't go on. What am I fighting for?
How bad did that pop, Sean?
Oh, pretty bad.
All right.
Flower.
So, and then he basically is like, it wasn't that funny, guys? Questions? And that's strike one right there, because you kind of save your questions until he had like seven other funny videos to show. You save your questions until the very end, because otherwise you might not know if you have enough time.
Mm-hmm.
And lo and behold, there was clearly the most interesting man in the universe was sitting in the front row of that, and he got the host into a conversation about the Mega Man Zero series on Game Boy Advance, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And the host, I'm not even kidding, pulled up a chair and just sat down and talked to that guy for 30 minutes. He would. Some guy in the front row who really liked the Mega Man Zero series, and I love the fact that we were pretty far in the back, so we couldn't hear a single thing that this other guy was saying. but the host would reply into the microphone and not repeat what the guy said. So we were hearing half of the conversation.
Oh my god!
And at least a third of the audience just left.
So there's no, I'm going to speak into the microphone, because I am the host, and I'm asking the question, but I'm not going to throw the microphone over to the guest and have him.
Okay. You know what that reminds me of? You remember Billy Mitchell and Walter Day at the Art of Video Games? When they bogarted Nolan Bushnell as the end of the
Introducing the best thing in the Art of Video Games, Twin Galaxies.
Seriously, no, but I mean, that description kind of reminds me, like, they completely bogarted the end of his panel. There's supposed to be a Q&A session, and what other chance are you going to get to ask the father of modern video gaming?
Nolan Bushnell, no.
What are you going to get that opportunity again? Never. And they fucking...
Of course, the host of this was just a fan. I don't think he was anyone involved in Capcom, but I'm not quite done yet. Oh. But just because I needed to sleep, Brett and I stayed there, and then he finally got on to talking about Resident Evil, and he put up a video. I'm pretty sure a Phalus from thatguywithglasses.com put up, in which he had a conversation between Chris and Wesker, in which he replaced all of Chris's dialogue with dialogue from that terrible Symphony of the Night opening cinematic. So you would have Wesker say, "Barry's dying, Chris. With the T-virus, I can save him." And then Chris says, "Humanity ill needs a savior such as you," and so on and so forth like that. And which would have been funny, but the host kept explaining every single joke. He says, like, okay, so he said that because Dracula thinks that because Shaft revives him, he's a savior, get it? Okay? Still with me? He just kept talking like that through the entire damn thing. I tried my best to find it on YouTube so I could listen to it, you know, unmolested. And I couldn't quite find it, so damn.
I just like that shtick where you have to explain the joke.
Thanks a lot, Seth MacFarlane. I think we can take it from here.
That's funny, because in my 6 years of Otakon, I've only had 3 panels in which I have walked out on or just knew that they were poorly run. And so, like, luckily there's a lot more professionally run panels.
I was still grateful that that night we saw the bad anime bad panel, which is basically anime Mystery Science Theater. Not to be confused with the other anime Mystery Science Theater guys, but... Yeah. But that one mystery anime theater guy.
Is that Garzy's Wing?
Yeah, Garzy's Wing. Yeah. He showed the third and final episode of Garzy's Wing, which is, if you don't know, it's basically anime's The Room or anime's Birdemic.
See, I saw the other one that you didn't see, which was, oh wait, this is the wrong one, but this is similar. It was like Dubs That Time Forgot, and they showed like a half an hour of the 12 different...
Captain Harlock. Yeah, I was there actually.
Yeah, that one was pretty funny.
I had no idea who Captain Harlock was, but he's a dapper looking gentleman.
Yeah, but so many people voiced him, and some of them voiced him very, very poorly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right. Well, so obviously, Otakon. You know, Jordan. Jordan didn't get so much out of it. Sean, I guess you got a little bit more out of it, but
yeah, there was. I still got to see like about 8 fun panels. So yeah.
Okay. All right, so, you know...
If you want me to discuss them in detail for half an hour, I could do that. No, I'm just kidding.
maybe next
time. Otakon is an excellent dealer's room.
Yeah, I would say...
I recommend it for that.
Yeah, I was going to say, honestly, the times I went there and got, like, part swag hunt, part sociological experiment.
Have you ever bought the mystery bags?
No.
I've never gotten the urge. I've always wanted to do that, but I never do that.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, just so much cosplay, so many furry critters and green people... Speaking of which, that seeks perfectly right into our next topic, Guardians of the Galaxy. Yeah, but so I think everybody in here has seen this movie, correct?
Mm-hmm. Twice.
Yes.
Yes. All right. Good. Then we don't have to worry about spoiling it for anybody. So just now, blatant disclaimer: spoilers.
Spoilers.
Skip the next 5 minutes if you don't want to hear anything about this movie. All right. Let's, I guess, just go around the room, starting with Jordan. Oh. What'd you think of it?
Thank you. I gotta say, I thought the plot was a little generic. It's kind of unfortunate, really, that the Marvel Studios have decided on the whole Infinity Gems, mega plot branching over as many movies as possible, because that basically means, well, all the heroes have to scour hell and creation for 6 magic rocks to get them before the mean big purple guy finds them. That's basically the plot of like the first 5 Final Fantasy games, right?
Or a liquid rock.
Mm-hmm. But despite that, this movie is totally saved. It is it excels because of the characters. They are every one of them without fail is incredibly fun for a multitude of different reasons. I remember on one of our BGN comic shops, Colin, you actually asked me on the air, who the hell are Guardians of the Galaxy and why are we making a movie out of them? I think I can answer those questions now.
Well, that was the problem, is that when we first discussed that, because the question is when you talk about Guardians of the Galaxy, there are 2 separate Guardians of the Galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
There is the 1969 Guardians of the Galaxy, which, okay, come on.
There's huge dude from Jupiter, a cold dude from Pluto, foxy elven fire chick from Mercury, and Yondu, the archer, who actually was in this movie, played by the Walking Dead dude.
Michael Rooker, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Who he wasn't an archer per se, because that's too hot, that's too Hawkeye, I think, for this movie. So, mm-hmm. So instead, he had a magic whistling activated single arrow.
I'm sure
half the people in the audience we saw with wanted to own themselves.
Yeah, I mean, and who could blame them? But then you have the 2008 reboot, which is the introduction of Star-Lord.
Star-Lord had been introduced in the mid-70s, but no one really cared about him for a really long time.
But this particular comic, I believe, was Guardians rebooted.
This is the Annihilation storylines now?
I believe
The post-Civil War, which is why I know nothing about it.
Right, so I think it gathered together Star-Lord, Rocket Raccoon,
Groot, and Gamora.
Was Gamora?
I want to say she was part of it.
There was one other one, I'm trying to remember.
And Drax?
Maybe Drax came later. I don't think he showed up initially, but he came later.
All right.
But yeah, so the original question was, when I asked that question, I had not heard of the 2008 reboot.
Mm-hmm.
I had only heard of the 1969 version, and I'd only heard very little. So I was like, why are we making this ancient property that no one's ever heard of?
Well, the whole movie kind of sits, it's a fantastic ensemble, I'd say. The whole movie, especially to non-comic book fans, kind of sits on the shoulders of Peter Quill. And he is so perfect to head this up, because he was a kid in the 80s who basically got abducted by Michael Rooker and flown to this wild, far-off corner of the galaxy full of two-fisted spacefaring adventure. And he has a major chip on his shoulder for being stolen from Earth, so he has all this... he has this tape of his mother's favorite pop songs from like the 60s and 70s and 80s, which becomes the soundtrack of the movie. And it is such a beautiful move, because it makes this crazy alien world seem familiar to John and Jane moviegoer.
Mm-hmm.
And because we all love the 80s, right?
Yeah.
That's how I knew the marketing was working, because they were using songs that were familiar, mm-hmm. to draw you in to something that was unfamiliar. Mm-hmm. And I knew that was probably part of it.
And it's like, you couldn't have done that. You couldn't have done that if this movie was about Silver Surfer. Nope. Or like Adam Warlock.
I don't think you can do a movie about Silver Surfer.
Silver Surfer's he's in cinematic timeout, along with you guys will never see the light of day again, like Howard the Duck. Oh wait!
We'll get to that in a second.
Anyway, yeah, let's pass on. What do you think, Brian?
Well, I think like everybody else, I was very much kind of like, who the fuck are the Guardians of the Galaxy? And I'm glad I saw it. Probably the besides Star-Lord, I thought Star-Lord had a fantastic fucking story in this movie. Very touching movie. Very just. There's a lot of heart in this movie. Actually, there was a lot of heart, particularly with Groot. I felt like, Groot and Rocket Raccoon are probably my favorite characters in that entire movie. You could really make an entire spin-off movie of those characters. I mean, they're just fantastic characters. And
well, now you can, because the animated series is coming soon to Disney XD.
Huzzah! so yeah, and just.
you know, the cast that they got for this was pretty damn outstanding too. I was kind of put off at first because I was like, wait a minute, Batista's gonna be in this? Like WWE mm-hmm. Batista? But he was pretty good in it,
actually. As Spock on steroids?
Pretty much. Like, but yeah, I really liked it. Yeah, the Infinity Gems, I'm like, you know, I was like, oh shit, okay, they're obviously continuing this on now, and I had to remember for a second, oh wait a minute, they had the Aether in Thor the Dark World, so now we're up to three. But yeah, it was like, I can't wait to see what's going to happen next. So yeah, I thought it was great. Saw it two times actually. So here you go.
I thought being that this was when I originally saw in the previous being that is a James Gunn film, and the last film I saw was Super, which I you know I was just like, wow, this is really gonna be that brutal. And then like I saw it and I was like, well, it is a little bit brutal. Like it does have like kind of a James Gunn-esque style to it where everything's kind of like, you know, it's there and like it's glorified a little bit, but it's not like fully like Zack Snyder glorified. But the other part of it that I really enjoyed was the visual Star Wars references. A lot of, I think my roommate didn't pick up on any like most of them. I was just like, dude, there's the hologram scene. There's like the TIE fighters. Like there's a bunch of stuff that are referencing Star Wars. But it was a very strong character driven movie. My favorite Marvel film. Thus far.
I'm gonna need that guy's leg, by the way.
I really enjoyed it. It was interesting because one of my favorite TV series of all time is Farscape. So like when I first started watching it, I was like wondering if it was gonna be the exact same premise. Only it's because it's like the Earthman who got stuck on an alien world, who meets a band of criminals, and together they have adventures. But in this one, they actually are criminals. In Farscape, they were falsely imprisoned non-criminals.
They were political prisoners.
Yeah. So, but it was just, it was really fun. I really liked a lot of the comedy. And one of the things I realized about the ending was kind of anticlimactic with the battle against Ronan, but I thought it didn't matter because it didn't need to be. The whole focus was on their character and all their other stuff in there anyway. Like,
yeah, of all the movies that end with the good guys defeating the villain with the power of love, I think this is one of the better ones. Really,
yeah,
the ones I've seen.
Because it didn't feel. Because I got a sense that Star-Lord was gonna die because he touched the Infinity Gem, and the other people touched him to also take the burden of the power, so he wouldn't die from it, and that
died. Exactly, they're like Jaeger pilots. They drifted the Infinity Stone.
Yeah, which is why I hated that line at the end where she's like, "You can hold the stone, because you were the." You know, ancient something. I was like, way to undermine your theme of the movie, like a few minutes later.
Yeah, good point.
But
because he's the chosen one, and
yeah, the one thing question I have though is Groot, because I don't read the comics of Guardians. The only thing I have read is Earth X, version of Guardians of the Galaxy, and I saw the Ultimate Spider-Man cartoon where they show up, and it's pretty much the exact same characters from the movie. But is Groot dead, and that's his son, or is he alive and regrowing?
Got me, man.
I think the way they put that is that it's that's Groot.
Okay.
But like a spore of him survived.
Like he might be a sapling for most of the next movie. We don't know, but
yeah.
Okay.
Baby Groot.
Oh my God, baby Groot.
Well, I have to, I guess, start my discussion on Guardians with turning to you, Jordan, and saying, I guess you are correct. I have to eat my words. Guardians of the Galaxy actually kicks a lot of ass.
Yeah.
For those of you who don't know, I wrote an article about Man of Steel when it came out, saying that, I thoroughly enjoyed that movie. I mean, a lot of the issues that a lot of people had with it were, you know, oh, it's too violent, it's too dark, and blah, blah, blah. I'm just like, well, it's just taking its subject matter more seriously than, say, the Avengers. I mean, there was just as much destruction in that movie as there was in the Avengers, but you don't have Joss Whedon, you know, throwing a joke in every 5 minutes. You know, it's actually like, oh yeah, death is fucking serious. Deal with it.
Well, also, one thing I heard is, like, in Avengers, they're actually evacuating citizens and trying to save lives, where in Man of Steel, and doesn't try to do that at all.
Well, yeah, and that's the problem is that, you know, he's in the middle of a fist fight. Yeah, there are eight of them trying to do that. How is one person, like, he can move fast, but he's also being chased by someone who's, like, in the exact same, you know, skill level as he is, but at the end of that article, I had basically stated that, you know, DC might end up doing, you know, better movies than Marvel, which, again, having not known they were doing the reboot of Guardians of the Galaxy, not the original Guardians of the Galaxy, I made a fatuous remark saying, at least DC's not making Guardians of the Galaxy, Of course, now, again, 3 years later, I now have to eat my words, because this movie was awesome. What am I going to say?
Yeah,
go ahead.
I was gonna say, the only thing I wasn't sure, like, the only thing I thought was, at the end it looked like Star-Lord and Gamora are now just friends. Like, they're everyone's friends. But I was like, but so then, why did we need that slightly, like, him trying to hook up with her in the middle part of the film if they wanted to establish just friends?
Because that was the guy he was, and he assumed that he's the hero of the story, and he was going to get the girl at the end, and then he didn't.
Yeah.
And he was like, oh, well, still save the galaxy. I guess I'll put that in the win column.
Yeah,
I didn't mind that at all.
Yeah, no, I feel like they didn't know it together, because it was about just them all being friends.
Yep.
So, which was nice, because normally it's always like, hey, we're saving a girl, now I want her.
So it's the same thing with Pacific, what I liked about Pacific Rim, is that the male and female lead weren't explicitly, you know, an item because they saved the world together. It was just left ambiguous, and I didn't mind that at all.
Yeah, and they were mentally connected, so you know they had some connection with that alien.
Yeah, now, I would say that there are certain points of contention I had with Guardians. Going back to what you said, Jordan, the involvement of the Infinity Gems, to be honest, I mean, the latter half of Phase 1 sort of had that issue where they were trying to weave in the Tesseract, and that ended up being the ultimate MacGuffin to end out Phase 1. So it is,
well, that was back when we thought it was just the Cosmic Cube, and
I agree there. So I understand why they're going with that, but I don't know why they were trying to sync. I mean, this is still considered Phase 2, right?
Oh yeah.
Right. So I don't know why they're trying to do something that you're not going to see the culmination of until Phase 3 this early on.
I mean, what, Phase 2 ends with Ultron,
right?
With Avengers 2, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, I would say, yeah, I guess I see where you're going with that, but honestly, they did something similar, just not as early as they did in Phase 1.
The movie's just such a fun ride. It's so crowd-pleasing, you know, it's not exclusatory. Like, I thought that audiences would kind of be turned off by this movie. Not to put words in his mouth, but my friend Brendan was kind of actively hoping that this movie would fail, because one of these has to at some point, and it would rather be this one that's so alien and weird and seemingly disassociated with everything else that's happening in the other Marvel movies, which it didn't fail, and it is related to the other Marvel movies as we described. Yeah. So
the biggest issue is, and I see your friend's point, honestly, out of all the next set of films, I honestly say if any of them is going to be really kind of setting itself up for failure, it's probably going to be Ant-Man.
Yeah, I'm afraid so, yeah.
Just because, A, you don't have the actual Ant-Man for reasons that are all too familiar.
They killed Janet, like, she's now dead before the movie shows up. So you killed, like, one of your only female leads that could ever be in
the
movies.
I'm comic nerding out here, but if Hank Pym had to have a wife that died, it should have been Maria, his first Hungarian wife.
Yeah, not.
And if Janet could have, whatever. It's,
yeah, no, I know. And there are reasons why.
I'm going to miss Edgar Wright so badly when that
movie
comes out.
I know, and that's the biggest kicker, is that people were going to go see this movie because Edgar Wright of Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz and The World's End fame was directing Ant-Man. We were all psyched for that. And he walked off the project.
Was it due to creative differences?
It was due to creative differences.
Of course it was.
I'm guessing that the Marvel movies probably have a lot of interference with the studio now to keep everything. Keep.
Have you watched?
Keep all these ducks in the line, and actually, no, I haven't.
Oh yeah. I don't think he mentions that he tries not to, but there's a lot of stuff that he couldn't do because the studios, like, told him this is what you could do. That's why he didn't come back for Iron Man 3.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and also, I mean, there's. RDJ has announced that Iron Man 4 is going down. It's going to be in Phase 3.
Really?
Seriously?
He didn't He basically sort of like dropped the ball on the red carpet, but he basically was like, yeah, Iron Man 4 is gonna happen.
So he's regular man in an Iron Man suit.
Well, now he just doesn't have like the shrapnel going into his heart. He can still have the thing.
I thought his story was over. Like, it was pretty much now he should just help, like, be, like, I don't know, manager to the Avengers.
I agree. And
let new characters come into the Avengers afterwards. He could be, like, the science guy that helps them on the ship or something.
I mean, that's kind of where they're going with Avengers 2. I mean, you know, he's kind of taking a, back seat.
I recall seeing a poster of Age of Ultron in which he's in the suit.
Yeah, I figured he would be.
Yeah.
Like,
okay.
Well, I mean, you can't have the Avengers without Iron Man. You just can't. I mean, trust me. I'm sure that Robert Downey Jr. is fucking sick of doing these movies. I mean, I know he loves money. Who doesn't? But there's only so. But actually, again, this sees us perfectly into our next topic. Okay, so there's been a lot of speculation, a lot of things that have been talked about of movies that are going to be coming out either soon or possibilities of movies that might come out in the near future.
Mm-hmm.
So we figured we'd pick some of our favorites and talk about them. Do we think they can work? Do we think they should happen? So starting first, I want to start with this one. Right around San Diego Comic-Con, some quote-unquote leaked footage of the Deadpool movie,
mm-hmm.
in which Ryan Reynolds comes back as Deadpool, which...
It's the footage is CGI, right?
Yeah,
So
Deadpool is CGI, but not the other footage.
No, those guys are CGI.
Oh,
yeah. That's all CGI.
Fox, you don't leak anything. You just patch things up.
Yeah.
Just let you know.
But to be fair, I'm gonna go on the record. I refuse to see I refuse to see X-Men Origins Wolverine in theaters because I walked out of X-Men 3 The Last Stand. I was like, nope, fuck them. Never again. Because
they killed Cyclops.
They killed Cyclops in the first 5 minutes. Yeah, mm-hmm. But then I saw it on DVD and it was fucking awful. But so my fears were validated. I didn't have to pay money to buy the DVD. I just borrowed it off of somebody, watched it. And I was like, all right, well, I can't get my 2 hours back. Whatever. So I heard about this. And I was like, oh Christ, they're gonna make another Deadpool movie and Ryan Reynolds is still Deadpool. Who thought this was a good idea? So I watched it, and again, it's just like Guardians of the Galaxy. I gotta eat my words because that trailer was hilarious. It actually restored my faith that Ryan Reynolds could be in a superhero movie and it wouldn't suck.
So if the proposed movie is also CGI, like that teaser, that would probably honestly be the best of both worlds. Because not only could it be as cartoony as you would expect a character like that to be, but also this is an important distinction. This means that Deadpool can keep his mask on the whole movie. If it's an animated film, then Ryan Reynolds will not be able to complain about his pretty face not being in this movie about a character who's hideously disfigured. This is really kind of an important distinction. Like, this is the reason why when Silver Surfer pump kicked Doctor Doom through a iceberg in that one movie, that cured him of his horrible disfigurement. So we could see Julie McMahon's handsome features.
Or why Venom always pulling back.
Why Venom is always yanking back his face. Or why Spider-Man is always whipping his mask off at every single opportunity. Again, that really killed me in the first Amazing Spider-Man when he's fighting Lizard in the school, and then the cops show up, Lizard leaves, and Spider-Man's like, oh no, the cops! Yoink!
Jesus Christ. I mean, yeah, it's an issue. I think, what was it? I think the only actor who's ever actually taken the character more seriously than seeing their face on screen was Carl Urban
in Dread.
The Dread.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. One of the best comic book movies.
I'd go on record and saying that's probably like one of the better comic book adaptations of late. In fact, if I ever had to go back and redo my top 10 list.
And just think, Colin, you ate your words again.
I know,
because
right?
You refused to see that in theaters because of Sylvester Stallone.
Also true. So, okay.
We should name this episode Humble Pie.
Yeah, here's the thing. I'll admit when I'm wrong, and I've admitted it 3 times in this episode. So, I'm
hat trick.
Yeah. Oh yeah, hat trick. Ding ding. But yeah. So if they do that, this has all the makings to be a fabulous movie. Because, I mean, it was... You had Deadpool just, like, acting recklessly abandoned like he always does.
Drawing in crayon. and hoping that his enemies were wearing brown pants. Yeah.
Another thing that about the question about the Deadpool movie is that it's rated... Oh, they're going to rate it PG-13. They're going for a PG-13 rating. I'm just wondering what everyone's thoughts is on that. And
has that been officially announced, or is that...
Yes.
Is that merely speculation at this point?
It's been announced.
Oh, so Deadpool is happening?
Well, yeah. Well, from what I heard. I don't know.
Okay.
I can't confirm the sources.
Well, I would hope that that's going to be one
of the... But the issue still remains, PG-13 or rated R? What do you think? Do you think it should be rated R, but you would exclude some audiences? Or do you want, like, a little more lighter, funnier PG-13 so everyone can see?
Well, I mean, it's my opinion that even though, you know, the mainstream opinion is that, you know, comics are for kids, you know, blah, blah, bullshit, blah, 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 blah.
I would hardly say that's the mainstream opinion anymore, dude.
Well, fair enough. I'm just saying.
When was the last time you saw a kid in a comic book store?
That's a great point.
I've seen like 5 in the last 15 years.
Okay.
I work in a comic book store.
Anyways.
I see, you know, 10.
That regardless.
Maybe.
I feel like, I don't know, let me think. They could go for an R rating. I feel like, you know, they could do a little more with it. But honestly, I think a PG rating is enough to keep the essence of the character. Because... if you read those books, yes, he does some horrible, gruesome shit sometimes, but is it enough to warrant an R rating? Very barely, I feel like. I mean, if they went for, like, one of the very extreme versions of the character, like, you know, where he's just looking at nudie magazines all day and, you know, calling everybody a cocksucker, what the fuck? Sure, fair enough, but, you know, I feel like they can make this movie so that it works in a PG, you know... territory, I feel like it's possible.
Yeah, I feel that could Deadpool work in a PG-13 format? Yes. Would I prefer to see it in an R format? Yes. I mean, I guess that's all just a matter of who ends up pulling directing duty for it.
Yeah.
Because again, it's all at this point, the rating, whatever rating they go with, is going to be pure speculation until the rating system gets their hands on the final product. It could end up being an R. Mm-hmm. We don't know.
If it does turn out to be a CGI movie, then that would take the edge off of PG-13 for me. I'd be happy to see that.
I think I could live with that, yeah. But, all right, so... I think... All right, so let's get a final verdict. Would you see a Deadpool movie? Jordan.
Sure.
Brian.
Fuck yeah.
Yes.
Sean. Sean Murphy.
Maybe. If I was a group of people. I've never really read him.
Okay. All right, that's fair enough. All right, I personally would see it just because if it could renew my faith that Ryan Reynolds could be funny in a superhero movie after Green Lantern and X-Men Origins Wolverine, then yeah, okay.
Also, if it's anything like the video game, oh my god, that game is so great.
Okay, yeah, all right, that's a good point. All right, so next...
The game, which was M-rated, by the way.
Yeah, right.
Yes. It was so great.
Yeah. All right, so next up. There's been discussion that Amazing Spider-Man 3 is going to be postponed in lieu of, I think it's what, Sinister Six comes first? Mm-hmm. Then there's discussion of, as a yet-to-be-unnamed female lead character of the Spider-Man universe, getting their own film. Now that brings up the discussion, who?
Well, it's a pretty short list to pull from.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. There's Spider-Woman...
There's 4 Spider-Woman, which would probably only make a movie out of 2 of them.
Yeah, that's the thing, is that Sony may actually not even have the rights to use Spider-Woman, because all 4 Spider-Women have so little to do actually with Spider-Man, then Marvel Studios might actually own those rights.
Right. Yeah. It's like the whole thing with Blade, like they couldn't make Blade 3 with Morbius because Morbius wasn't actually owned by New Line Cinema at the time, so they had to scrap their whole Blade project to make what we found out to be Blade 3 that came out.
Oh, I'm sorry.
and the only other possible character they could make was, I don't know, like Black Cat or Spider-Girl and make a PG all-ages Spider-Man movie with Spider-Girl.
Yeah, the thing about Spider-Girl is that, well, the Spider-Girl that I'm thinking of is Mayday Parker, the Spider-Man, Peter Parker and Mary Jane's daughter from the far-flung future, which would be kind of a convoluted story to throw at us without any other previous setup, to say the very least. Black Cat is just far and away the most obvious choice, by virtue of the fact that they already... I'm pretty sure we kind of already introduced her in the second Amazing Spider-Man movie.
Oh, that's right. She was
in that, that there was a secretary named Felicia.
I think I was like, oh God, is that can't be her, right?
Surprise! Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we were actually having a discussion about it before recording tonight, and Sean Murphy brings up an interesting point, is that if you filmed it from the, you know, from the point of view of a heist film, and akin to like Heat or Ocean's 13 or Ocean's 11, really.
Mm-hmm. Because then it could be a heist movie with supervillains, and maybe they get evade like some superheroes, or maybe just regular cops, or maybe they're not even superheroes. Maybe they're like, I mean, not even supervillains.
Gangsters.
Black Cat and other people who have like techno powers, who aren't really super, you know, here villains. And then just make her character arc, like, maybe she's trying to live up to her father's expectations, who was a super criminal, because I think that's how the comics was, right? Mm-hmm. He was also a good criminal. And this could be, like, her first heist or something. So, like, there, you have a plot, you have a movie. It's her becoming, like, the criminal that I guess she'll be established as by the time Spider-Man 3 or 4 comes out.
She's the criminal that New York wants.
Do you remember in the Spectacular Spider-Man cartoon when they changed the Black Cat's father to Dennis Carradine, the guy who killed Uncle Ben? That should put the kibosh on Spider-Man's romantic involvement with her, didn't it?
Wait, her father killed his uncle. Ben?
In that cartoon's continuity, not classically. No.
Really? I just remember that she got the super soldier serum because she was just a regular.
That was the 90s cartoon. I was referring to the Spectacular Spider-Man cartoon from 2008.
Okay, I don't remember that part.
I have it on Blu-ray. You can borrow it sometime.
Did anyone else see Black Cat's a few appearances in Superior Spider-Man, where Octavius just hauls off and just beats the crap out of her?
No.
I'm behind, but he webbed her up. He's like, "You're a criminal. Goodbye." And then she's like, "What the fuck?" And
no, he full on clocked her,
and then just leaves. And she's like, "I won't forget this." Now I think she's gonna attack
revenge.
Peter Parker now that he's back or something.
That issue's already come out, actually. I think it was 3.
No, I'm still behind. I have the last graphic novel of Superior to read.
The issue I have with a Black Cat, like Ocean's 11 type movie, is that I kind of figure that's what the Sinister Six movie would be like.
I feel like, but I don't know. I feel like the Sinister Six movie would be like, we're going to take over the world. Whereas this would be like, we're trying to steal a diamond.
I would go with him on this. I think their modus operandi in that would be to like kill Spider-Man, take over the world, blah blah blah, whereas her is just straight up theft and like trying to, you know, put one over on society as a whole.
Just
so,
don't go the route of, oh, I fall in love with a cop, then you have a freaking Catwoman movie, you know.
Christ.
Or Birds of Prey, or other movies I can mention with the same exact plotline.
Please don't
Highlander the Raven, because that was a good one.
Anyway, alright, so would we see a Black Cat movie, Jordan?
I guess.
Would you see a Spider-Girl movie if they decided to do that?
I guess.
Here's a better question. Black Cat or Spider-Girl?
I think Black Cat's the most viable option.
Brian, Black Cat or Spider-Girl?
Black Cat, I guess.
Sean, Black Cat or Spider-Girl?
Black Cat.
Murphy?
Well, since I just told you the plot of what a Black Cat movie would be...
I obviously think you'd probably go with that.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'd probably go with Black Cat too, just because...
I really
without introducing Mary Jane Watson, you know, in a more, you know, a more fleshed out role... What
I also think it would be better if Spider-Man's not in the movie at all. Because it seems like they would set her up to show up in a future Spider-Man movie.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Where she would then become good
because
she falls in love with Spider-Man.
Yeah, something like that. okay, so... Leaving that, we now have... There's been discussions about the third Ghostbusters film.
Oh, boy.
First it was going to happen, then it wasn't going to happen. Then Bill Murray lost his rights to the Ghostbusters franchise, then Harold Ramis died. Now the point of contention is that they might just completely reboot Ghostbusters, but with an all-female cast. Paul Feig has been talked about, one of the people who might be tapped to do it. Paul Feig did Bridesmaids and The Heat starring Melissa McCarthy. And, alright, so I would say, could you, so I guess, first question, should, now that Harold Ramis is dead, Bill Murray has no creative control because he's lost the rights, his portion of the rights to the Ghostbusters franchise. You know,
Dan Aykroyd's basically given up on the script at this point.
Dan Aykroyd's given up. Ivan Reitman refuses to have anything to do with it now that Harold Ramis is dead. Should we have another Ghostbusters movie at this point? So I think, all right, so I have two people raising their hands to say, so we'll start with Sean.
No. I say let Sleeping Dogs Lie because, like, they can make a new movie of any other franchise. I don't care. Just don't try not to. I don't want anybody to ruin my Ghostbusters because, like, I even like the second one. And, like, I just. They're both good movies in my eye, and I just want them to be just Ghostbusters. Like, this is the picture of the good old days. Don't ruin the image for me by just going, hey, we made that thing. Remember the thing? I'm like, yeah, we have it on DVD. So go screw yourselves.
Okay, so Brian.
Thanks, Sean. You stole my argument, basically. I was basically going to say the same thing is that, you know, look, if you want, okay, there's nothing wrong with taking four women, four funny women, and putting them in a situation where they're chasing ghosts. That's absolutely fine. You can make a great movie out of that. Don't name it Ghostbusters, because we all know what Ghostbusters is. We know what the Ecto-1 is. We know who Slimer is. It's all just, burned into our brains at this point. Do something else with this. Why not do, like, for instance, if you're going to do a movie like this where they're chasing ghosts, why not make a parody of Ghost Hunters with a bunch of, like, a whole female cast instead of, like, trying to, you know, screw that Ghostbusters name in there? Because, honestly, you're just kind of, like, burning the candle at both ends at that point. You're just like, okay, we want to try and, you know, go back to, you know, the good old days, but we're also trying to do something new. It's not going to work. It's just not.
But, Brian, they want more money.
I know they want
more money. I don't...
It's remake decade now, so...
I don't fucking care.
You know, of all the reboots I've seen and heard about, I've never come across one that's basically a Rule 63 reboot. Yeah. I'm picturing Patricia Venkman falling in love with a cellist named Dan. Is that what we're expecting to happen here?
No,
is Dan going to be the keymaster, not the gatekeeper this time?
I think it would just be four women who were their own new characters. It would just be the same concept. They start a ghost questing thing.
If that's the case, then you may as well have it a sequel. You may as well just have them be a new chapter, like the Los Angeles chapter of the Ghostbusters.
There's a Chicago Ghostbusters.
Well, and
chapter.
I think we were also talking about this before we started recording tonight. One of the original versions of the Ghostbusters 3 script was that they were attempting to franchise the Ghostbusters franchise out, but Walter Peck was blocking them from doing that.
What a dick.
I know, right?
What's his name? Will Atherton, I think.
William Atherton.
I kind of feel sorry for that guy sometimes. He's played other roles, but they've all just been such complete assholes.
Yeah.
He just gets compared
back to Walter Peck.
He makes it sound like, you know, people throw like food at him while they're speeding by in cars whenever they see him on the sidewalk.
So, I mean, my opinion is, could they do a Ghostbusters remake? Yeah, of course they can. Should they? No. And again, going with your arguments, it's Ghostbusters is its own thing. They tried going back to the well. They got money. It wasn't as popular. They knew not to make a third one. And then finally, it came to the point where
they made the video game, which was basically Ghostbusters 3.
Ghostbusters 3.
It was supposed to springboard the movie after that.
Right. It was that, and I think that was supposed to be, that was leading into that script where, and the problem is that Bill Murray has been like, he's just been dancing around the subject. It was first he wasn't gonna do it, then he would do it, but he stipulated that his character had to be dead. Then he said he would actually act in it. And then he said he wouldn't act in it, and then Harold Ramis died, and so finally it's just like, why fucking bother? If you can't have the original cast, then there really is no point of calling it Ghostbusters. Could you call it another movie? Yes, you could, easily. And I think that's, if they're gonna do a Ghostbusters premise, then yeah, they can do that, and they should do that, but don't fucking call it Ghostbusters. Something else.
See, I'm probably slightly disagree with most of you there, because I think it could work if you have a good writer and director. I would probably go see it based on that. If it's because, like, it depends on who the writer and director would be, I would think. But also, I think, like, who knows? Like, I'm generally the mindset a movie should be 25 years old before it gets remade. But, I mean, maybe make this in 5 years or so. When at that point, a whole new generation can learn about a new set of Ghostbusters. I mean, they still are doing, like, what, like, Ninja Turtles and remaking other live-action movies now that are, like, but it depends,
Like RoboCop? Did you see RoboCop?
God, no.
I mean, well, that's the thing.
I saw who was writing, directing it. I didn't care.
But that, here...
And I saw the same with Turtles, and I didn't care. And, like, it would depend on, like, I don't care at this point. I have to have faith in the writer-director when it comes to those remakes.
Well, here's the thing. Paul Feig has... He's popular for these all-female cast movies
that have made money,
which have made money. Yeah, Bridesmaids was extremely popular, as was The Heat, starring Sandra Bullock and Melissa McCarthy.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I'm all for the possibility of there being an all-female version of the Ghostbusters. I'm just saying, at this point, if the people who were the most fervent supporters of Ghostbusters, i.e. Dan Aykroyd, if Dan Aykroyd doesn't think that the script has, if like the possibility of Ghostbusters has a merit anymore, why bother?
Here's the thing though, is the movie is not, if they remake Ghostbusters, it's not going to be for us. It's going to be for the next generation. So at that point, it's going to be for all the new people that are like 1 to 30 that they could get into.
But that's the thing, we're in that buying market, and we were around when the first Ghostbusters was around. So technically, it is being made for us, and we don't want it.
Okay, I was 2 when the first Ghostbusters came around, but...
It was 84, and I had been born... I was born a year later, and then I was...
89
when Ghostbusters 2 came out. So I think I saw Ghostbusters 2 in 89. Not in theaters, but I think... when it was released on VHS, that's when I saw it.
Just a hypothetical. Let's say that, you know, they were still on board. Let's say Dan Aykroyd, Bill Murray were still on board. Let's say that they, you know, were like, well, we still think that we might be able to believe in this script. We might be able to do something with it. What if they were to rewrite it as, you know, okay, obviously the first two movies, they came back in the second movie. But now it's like, okay, well, the economy obviously just dropped down. So what if, I don't know, they had to get real jobs, but then they find out, hey, oh shit, Egon died, and they kind of have a reunion, and all of a sudden, I don't know, for whatever reason, while they're having a reunion, oh shit, look, you know, all these specters are coming back. I mean, like, they could do something like that. I don't know.
That sounds really disrespectful, actually.
Sounds like Blues Brothers 2000.
Yeah, that's... Let's go piss on John Belushi's grave territory.
I'm so sorry I have that soundtrack, though.
Mm-hmm.
Fair enough. All right, so... Fair enough.
Nope.
I'm sorry. So, Jordan...
There's a movie coming out that I think I can mention, since we're all talking about reboots and Ryan Reynolds's and everything.
All right, well, before you switch to that, let's get final opinions on... All right, so... First question, would we see a Ghostbusters sequel? Jordan. Now, I say Ghostbusters, I don't mean Ghostbusters reboot, I mean Ghostbusters sequel. If they could convince the remaining members to join the project, and they could somehow convince Ivan Reitman to come back and be the original three remaining members, that's Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd, Ivan Reitman, to at least be involved. Not maybe... I stand corrected. Reitman is actually still attached to the project. He's not directing. He's a producer at this point.
Okay,
so he is still involved, but he is not directing the film at this point. So, Ghostbusters sequel, would you see it?
Probably not. I don't know. I'm not. As much fun as it was hanging out with. Ernie Hudson at Awesome Con. I don't find myself to be the biggest Ghostbusters fan.
Okay.
I played the video game. That's as Ghostbusters 3 as I really need to get.
Okay. Jordan. I mean, no, not Jordan. Brian. Brian, would you see a Ghostbusters sequel?
You know, probably. I mean, I grew... You know, not only did I grow up with the movies, but I was a huge real Ghostbusters fan. Like, I still have, you know, the firehouse up in the attic at my old place, and I still have a bunch of old action figures and whatnot. So, I obviously have a deep-seated love of that franchise. So, probably, yes. Would I enjoy it? Probably not.
Okay.
But I'd at least give it a chance.
Sean.
If it came out on video, sure. I wouldn't see it in theaters.
Okay. Murphy.
I think it's too far gone. Like, at this point, like, the sequel should have happened 5 to 10 years later, max. I think at this point, I'd be more interested in seeing that all-female one than I would an actual sequel.
would I see a sequel? Probably not. So, moving into that second question now that you mentioned that, would you see a Ghostbusters reboot? Jordan?
Hard to say. Like I said, the whole Rule 63 thing, I'd really need to get some reviews in first before I...
Okay, fair assessment.
Yeah, it's just going to feel like, you know, seeing an Adventure Time episode at that point.
Okay, fair enough. Brian, would you see a Ghostbusters reboot?
You know, probably. Probably, but I'd have to see the trailer first. I'd have to get a feel for it. I'd have to see where they're going with it because, you know, it was mentioned beforehand before we started recording that, you know, they could go the comedic route or they could go the Hollywood route where it's just like, oh, we need to make it serious. We need to get serious actresses into this and blah, blah, blah. So I feel like if they went that route, probably not. But I feel like if they could get a solid ensemble cast together, yeah, it could work.
Okay. All right. Sean Holmes, would you see it? Oh, Ghostbusters reboot.
Ghostbusters reboot. If they didn't title it Ghostbusters, yes. If they titled it Ghostbusters and then try to steal that nostalgia, no, I would avoid it like I'm avoiding Ninja Turtles now.
Okay. Sean Murphy, would you see a Ghostbusters reboot?
Yeah, like I just mentioned, yeah, and earlier, if it depends on the writer director, if I like have faith in the stuff they've written before.
Okay. After hearing that Paul Feig was involved, and again with his successes with all female ensembles previously, I feel like I have to agree with Brian on this. Would I see it? I'd have to see who was casted. And then I probably have to see the trailer before I can make a final decision on whether or not I would see the film or not. Just because, like Brian said, if they got a cast of all-female comedians, maybe I could do it. Just because, again, they got that was an all-male cast of, I think Ernie Hudson was not a comedian, but the three main characters were all comedians.
I can name some off the bat: Tig Notaro, Aisha Tyler.
I would see a Ghostbusters movie if Aisha Tyler was in it.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Very much so.
She was pretty good in the music video for Wheeler Yankovic's Tacky.
And also, she's phenomenal in Archer.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Lana.
Oh.
Lana.
There's her. With Paul Feig, I'm somehow convinced that Melissa McCarthy would be involved.
Which would not be a bad thing.
Necessarily. It just depends on how they figure the characters out. There are a few... I was talking with my girlfriend before we started this recording, and she was excited. She was rattling off her own list of female comedians she would like to see. Kulop from Who Charted. She'd want to see Mindy Kaling from The Mindy Project.
Yeah.
I mean, that's your opinion. I'm just telling her what she thought.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, right. So when I see it, yeah, I probably would see it. All right, Jordan, you had one more movie you wanted to talk about.
We were talking about reboots and Ryan Reynolds, so screw it. The Highlander reboot.
Holy shit,
dude.
I had almost forgotten about that.
It's really happening now?
I've heard it's been off and on.
It's conjecture at this point. There's no official...
I
walked off the set.
All right, so, well, here, we got people throwing their hands up. So,
okay,
Jordan, finish your thought.
All right, I've been thinking about this, honestly, and you know, the first Highlander, I have that on Blu-ray. I like it fine. It's not one of my favorite movies exactly, but really, I came to the realization recently that there is probably no other beloved, like, 80s property that deserves a reboot more than Highlander, because every installment of the Highlander series since then has been flawed, to say the least. Like, there's probably not been any more maligned list of sequels for any other film franchise I can think of.
It was the last one I was happy about in the last decade.
You know, when Highlander 2 is considered one of the worst films of all time, and then Highlander: The Source comes out, and people say that's even worse than that.
Oh, you haven't watched it? We should totally watch it.
No, I know enough about it to know it's.
I want to cause you the same pain that I felt.
Yeah, that series is pretty much screwed. Like, its only hope, I think, is to be rebooted.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it would be pretty, honestly, for a film that half the narrative is across the span of time, it's a movie that I think could be you could keep the feel of the original movie, but involve a lot more different time periods and perhaps different stories.
Like, stop going back just to Scottish Highlander people, and go to, like, someone else across the whole map, past, present, future of time itself, rather than keep going back to the same location all the time.
Now, to be fair, the Highlander, the original Highlander film, I mean, whereas the opening act did focus heavily on his roots in Scotland.
Mm-hmm. You also picked him up like during the Revolutionary War and during World War II.
That came in the second act. The first act focused, anytime there was a flashback in the opening, the first act of the film, that focused on his Scottish heritage, but that was because that was defining him as a character and defining his life as a immortal. That whole explanation. Once that had been fleshed out, and once Ramirez's character had been killed off at the beginning of the second act, It then opened up and actually did do a fairly decent cross section of going back in time, which I still, one of my favorite lines out of any Highlander film is in that movie.
Yes.
Remember? Does anybody remember? Remember? He gets what was it? He knocks the machine gun out of the Nazi's hands. And he just tells him to move, and the Nazi's like, "Nah, I'm not doing it." He's like, "Whatever you say, Jack, you're the master race." I'm just like, oh, so bad, but it's so good. It's horrible. But anyway.
Okay, the remake probably won't have a Queen soundtrack, but I guess...
Is it supposed to be more comedic? Why Ryan Reynolds is attached to it?
I mean, that's the thing. It's when it was mentioned, Ryan Reynolds was probably the one person who was being mentioned as...
One of the lead contenders at this point.
It's old. I don't think it's moving forward. I haven't heard anything new about it since.
We kept talking about Ryan Reynolds.
It's a good point to make. I'm just saying, I haven't heard anything new about it. But okay, so let's end this discussion on films with this. Okay, so Highlander reboot, leaving out Ryan Reynolds as the lead character, but Highlander reboot. Would you see it, Jordan?
Yeah, I came to this epiphany that I actually wouldn't mind giving that a shot.
Okay. Ryan, would you see a Highlander reboot?
Absolutely. I feel like Jordan said, it absolutely is in dire need of a reboot. And I feel like if they played the cards right, they could really do something spectacular with it.
Okay. Sean Holmes, would you see a Highlander reboot?
I'm not too attached to the original franchise, but yeah, I'll go see it.
Sean Murphy, would you see a Highlander reboot?
I have seen every single Highlander TV show, movie, everything it's ever made.
You poor bastard.
And, yeah, I would probably have to wait to see the trailer, much like the RoboCop reboot, and see reviews first, because all these reboots have really been just destroying the source material at this point. So I would need to see a trailer and maybe see a few reviews, like maybe, and then watch it 2 or 3 weeks after it's premiered. Because I've avoided a few films now because of that. So...
Okay. Sean's laughing over there.
I had a fantastic idea when the Highlander reboot comes out, which it will. Yeah. Because, you know, God forbid we'll meet in Spaceballs 2. That's like for my money. But but when we do, I think everyone who's been like a film major brings their own Highlander edit. Because like usually in film classes, you edit like an episode of the TV show Highlander. What? So I think, yeah, we should just like clip those together and then just... show it before we go see it, so that'd be something fun to do.
What do you mean by clip them together, like?
Well, like put them on one DVD, and then like watch it before we go see the actual film.
All right, okay. All right. So would I go see a Highlander reboot? I actually have to go against the grain on this one. If they were to reboot Highlander, I probably would not go see it. Not because I'm not a fan. I mean, I like Highlander, but honestly, I felt that Highlander as a film should have ended with the first one. They should never have made any sequels.
There should have been only one.
Exactly. Yeah. Thank you.
The TV series. Good.
No. The TV series was pointless. I felt it was not necessary. I mean, they pretty much in the first film was like, okay, he's killed all the immortals. He's won the prize. Where did all these other fucking people come from that we needed a second and third film into the TV series?
Zeist.
Well, no, they were trapped in a cave, if you watch the third movie.
Or trapped in a cave.
Okay, but anyway, so we're running low on time. So, first thing I want to mention before we... plugs. Jordan, where can we find you on the World Wide Web?
Okay, I have a YouTube channel, youtube.com/thesynapse, right in the synapse, T-H-E-S, still sick. THESYNAPZE, which is the proud home of my video review show, Geek Critique. That's critique spelled CRITEEK. The misspellings mean I'm a rebel and shouldn't date your daughter. and that's also home to my brief jokes at upcoming movies series called Coming Soon, as well as my new vlog series called Misfired Synapse, in which I talk about the trials and tribulations of being an internet material provider, and perhaps impart some information on others who are interested in following those footsteps.
All right.
And also, I'm on Twitter at Synapse, again, THESYNAPZE. And look for the Castle Studios podcast I co-host, VGN Comic Shop, at castlestudios.com.
All right. Brian, anything else besides anything he just said?
Yes, you can find me on Twitter, twitter.com/bmatsy1987. Also, check out our Facebook page for One Drunk Geek. We'll be dropping a new episode soon, hopefully. And with Mr. Sean, we have a little project coming out soon that's, I think, got a lot of promise. And I'll go ahead and let you plug that at the end of the show. So
that's Sean Murphy, not Sean Holmes.
Yes, Sean Murphy.
Sean Holmes.
Hi.
Is there anywhere we can find you on the World Wide Web?
You can find me on the Twitter at Sean L. Holmes, which you can find my tweets, my vines, and my occasional ramblings about society.
Yay.
Okay, Sean Murphy, is there anywhere we can find you on the World Wide Web?
Yes. I wasn't expecting to do that at the end. Right now, well, I have a YouTube channel where I'm getting videos of my series, Murphy's Media Memories, which is on hiatus until next year at the moment while I film videos and write more episodes. My YouTube user is The Scarlet Spider, and that's also my Twitter name, but mine is the R in Scarlet Spider, because there's a 15-character limit. And, I also have a webcomic online right now, if I can plug that.
Go ahead.
It's called realmsofflux.com, if anyone wants to check out a nice fantasy comic.
Because who doesn't like fantasy comics?
Yes. And then also, Realms of Flux, that's how it sounds. REALMSOFFLUX.
Very good.
And then, we have a new show that we're working on. The first episode has been cut online, a rough cut of it. It's called Yanni Plays. We're developing the next two episodes right now, and we hope to have it out soon so you can have a fun new show to watch.
Huzzah.
Very good. You can find me at Colin the Twitter at Colin the 20-something. You can also find Boldly Going Nowhere, in fact, all Castaway Studios, at BGN Podcasts on Twitter. And then, of course, you can also follow Castaway Studios on Facebook.com at www.facebook.com.
Who types that in anymore? Facebook.com/Castaway Studios.
Whatever.
And also go to CastawayStudios.com/Amazon, and please, please, please bookmark it for all your shopping needs, and you'll save so much money.
Indeed. So, as we always do at the end of the show, I'm Colin Kakamas.
And I'm Jordan Hazelwood.
I'm Brian Massey.
I'm Sean Holmes.
And I'm Sean Murphy.
And you're Boldly Going Nowhere. Outro.
Boldly Going Nowhere is a Castwave Studios production. For other shows and more, visit castwavestudios.com. Wow, that sounded great.
CastWaveStudios.com presents Sage Advice. And now, here is Scott Fletcher.
It's like 10,000 spoons when all you need is a knife. And isn't it ironic, don't you think?
Thank you.